There's a great deal of history to be found on most university campuses, but not just in the buildings and the libraries. The trees also have a story to tell. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. There are some very special trees on the Iowa State University campus, as there are on college campuses everywhere. This hour, I'll talk with Assistant Dean and Professor of Horticulture Bill Graves about the Heritage Tree Program at Iowa State. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here, and he and Bill will answer your questions. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. In a few minutes, horticulturist Richard Giron will join us, and we will answer your questions. But first, we're going to talk about some very big trees. Bill Graves is Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. He also has a passion for old trees. Hello, Bill.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And your interest in the big, beautiful trees on the Iowa State campus predates the Heritage Tree Program that we're going to talk about in a moment. A while back, you founded a group called Historical Trees on Campus. Tell me about the goal of that group.
Well, the goal is inspired by the Morrill Land Grant's anniversary, which was in 2012. It was on July 2nd. Of 1862 that President Lincoln signed the Morrill Act, which led to the establishment of universities like Iowa State in every state of the country. And it was at the time of that anniversary when I decided to act on an interest I'd had for quite a while, which was to try to document as many historically significant trees on land-grant college campuses as I could. And during the year 2012, I managed to make it to about half of the states in the country and to photograph and measure, document the historical trees on each land-grant campus. I plan to continue visiting additional states as time permits, but it's sort of a side activity for me.
So you've really been doing this entirely on your own?
Yeah, I guess I try to combine it with other trips I need to make for other business purposes or for personal travel that I do to visit family. Whenever it's convenient, I try to get to one of these campuses and work ahead of time to talk to experts in that university community who are aware of the trees on their campus and who can advise me about the history of the trees and what trees they consider most significant.
So when you go to a campus and you want to look at these trees, take down information on them, what kind of information are you collecting?
Well, some of it is just the basic factual information about the tree, what the species of the tree is, whether there is any information at the university about when the tree was planted, or if there is good reason to believe that the tree might have predated the university and been really be indigenous to the site. And so such that it was really never planted at all. It was there all along before the campus was established. In addition to those kinds of things, I'm measuring the trunk diameter of the tree. There's a standard method in forestry where a trunk of a tree can be measured at a certain distance from the ground level, and then that measurement can be used to estimate the age of the tree. So there are equations that have been developed that take into account the way that that various tree species develop and the trunk diameter that is associated with trees at different ages. So I'm able to estimate tree age that way. It's kind of a crude estimate, but it's the best we can do without being destructive to the tree and perhaps causing it some harm. Then I'm trying to interview people as well, these experts that are around campus, even on occasion some students that I randomly encounter who are doing something with the tree or near the tree, and I try to interview them about their perceptions of the importance of the trees on the campus to them as students. The experts, I'm trying to learn from them what history is associated with the tree. For example, at Michigan State University, I learned that a former president of the university's daughter was married underneath a very old white pine tree near the president's home. So folklore, I guess you would call it, associated with the trees.
So was there a tree or were there a few trees at Iowa State that had piqued your interest and made you want to start this program?
I think of two or three in particular that are especially inspiring to me. One is a tree that many people may know who, even if you're not commonly in Ames, but have visited a few times, one of the busiest intersections for automobiles in town is the intersection of Lincoln Way and University Boulevard. University Boulevard used to be called Elwood Drive. I think of it still as Elwood Drive. And at that corner, which is very close to Hilton Coliseum, on the northeast side of that intersection, there's an enormous sycamore tree. And I think it's probably safe to say that it's the most recognizable tree in Ames, and that many people from this area consider it the most beautiful tree in Ames. It has a wonderful silhouette, wonderful architecture of branches, and sycamores are famous for their beautiful bark and the architectural, structural quality of their branches, which is most evident in the winter when the leaves are off the tree. So that tree is particularly inspiring, and although it's on the east side of University Boulevard, it is still university property, so that's an Iowa State University tree. Then right on Central Campus, there are a couple of trees that are particularly noteworthy, in my opinion. One is just south of Cad Hall, on the southwest side of Cad Hall, another very prominent tree, which is a bur oak. It has beautiful branches that swoop down to the ground, touch the ground, and then ascend back up at their tips. Just south of that is a black oak. Black maple. Black maple is a native form of hard maple related to the eastern sugar maples that are famous for their fall color. Then we have a row of sycamore trees, commonly referred to as Sycamore Row on campus, the same species as that enormous tree at the corner of Lincoln Way and University, but this row of trees extended originally from the hub on our central campus, which was a train station, the dinky train line that ran between campus and downtown Ames. From the hub to downtown Ames, there was a row of sycamore trees planted between 1910 and 1920, probably just a little over 100 years ago, there were originally about 50 trees, but many of those remain, not all of them, but we're trying to preserve those and celebrate those, and we've been propagating those as part of the Heritage Tree
Right.
Program.
Right, and let's talk about the Heritage Tree Program, because it started, a couple of years ago with a large catalpa tree on campus, right?
Yes. So one of my offices on campus is in a building called Pearson Hall. Some of the listeners may know about Pearson. It's near Beardshire Hall. And just outside of Pearson Hall, there was an enormous catalpa tree, which had a lot of character. Catalpas seem to be either loved or hated by people for various reasons. I'm a lover of catalpas, but I know plenty of people who don't like them because they can be rather messy and a little weak-wooded. But this beautiful catalpa had a wonderful architecture and flowered every year, first week of June, typically big white clusters of flowers, and just had a lot of character. But it had declined over the years and was becoming a safety hazard. There are sidewalks where students walk by all the time, and there was just a lot of concern that a major limb could come down and actually hurt someone. So the decision was made to remove the tree, but before it was removed, we were able to collect seeds from it, and we grew those, and that became the first heritage tree that we featured as part of this program that started in 2012.
And when you propagated the tree, it was partially to save the genetics of this unique tree that had a history with Iowa State. What were your other goals?
Well, the campus is interested in perpetuating this, you could call it the germplasm, the genetic heritage of these trees on campus. So they're very interested in having trees propagated from our original historical trees in order to have those same genetics represented on campus in the future. So one of the goals of this program is to propagate trees to give back to campus, to have a certain number replanted on campus. And actually, at the very site where that catalpa was removed, there is now a two-year-old seedling in its place that is growing there. So that's the idea. We also have several other seedlings from that original catalpa in different areas of campus. And the other aspect of this program is to try to make these trees available to alumni and friends of Iowa State or others just around the state who want to have, or outside of the state, who want to have a connection to the campus. So we've been able to propagate more plants than we need for use on campus itself and make those available for sale through the Iowa State University Alumni Association, which is helping us promote this program.
And so this year it was sycamores, right, from Sycamore Row?
Yes, the sycamores from the famous Sycamore Row were propagated, again from seed. So they're not genetically identical to those original trees because we would need to propagate those using some kind of an asexual method to do that. But these still, as seedlings, are the progeny of those Sycamore Row sycamores, and those were offered for sale this year.
And do you have plans for next year?
Yes. Well, the students that are involved in this project, and we have a lot of assistance from various people, the grounds crew who help us collect. We've been up in boom trucks collecting acorns from oaks and couldn't do that without their assistance. And we also have several students, graduate students and undergraduate students, who are assisting with this. And we try to collect seeds at this time of year. This is the time of year when most trees are producing seeds that are ready to collect from various species, kind of hedge our bets because we know that trees in particular can be difficult to propagate. And so we don't want to just rely on having one species collected each year. So we're collecting, you know, from maybe up to a dozen species every year, and then seeing what performs best for us and how quickly they grow. We probably have close to a dozen species in the mix right now. For next year, it looks like a swamp white oak will be featured.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment, and you can join the conversation with your questions. I'm talking with Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We've been talking about the Heritage Tree Program. Richard Giron will join us in a second, and they'll both answer your questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about Heritage Trees this hour, a program at Iowa State University. And we've been talking about big trees all over the nation. In fact, Bill Graves is Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Joining us now is Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And you can join our conversation as well with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, before we entirely move on, you've been traveling around the country documenting trees on college campuses. Are you finding that other people are getting excited about this and maybe getting excited about copying the Heritage Tree Program too?
Yeah, actually, I think it has generated a lot of interest in other states. The people that I meet with are always really excited and proud of the trees that they have on their campuses and interested in doing anything they can to promote the trees and help, you know, preserve them over the long term. One thing that I'm working on now is a website where these trees are going to be depicted with some facts and stories associated with them, also available online. So I hope within the next year to have that up and fully running as a website. But yeah, I think there are, and there are other schools that have different versions of a program like this, although not many that have offered the progeny of plants to alumni.
All right. Well, I'm sure that a lot of people are excited about that, and I wouldn't be surprised if other schools follow suit in the future. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. This is a question from Derek in Cedar Rapids. We have a, and I may say this wrong, but a Gracilis hinoki, a false cypress, and about a month ago, I noticed the inside green branches were turning brown. They were planted this past spring with plenty of water and are in full sun. Is that normal for the fall or winter time for this kind of tree?
I would say that's normal. I think what they're seeing there is seasonal needle loss because the actual foliage is not permanent. It does remain for maybe 2 or 3 years, possibly longer, but eventually it does fall off. And so it typically does in the fall. So if it's the inner growth, that is the oldest growth, and that's probably normal.
Okay, that's good news. 866-780-9100 or Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. Barry is on the line next from Red Oak. Hi, Barry.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Red Oak has a number of really big oak trees and maple trees, some of them that are about 4 feet in diameter. And I'm trying to figure out how would you measure them to guess the age on these trees?
Well, the standard method is to measure up from the ground level 4.5 feet and then you can use a tape measure to measure the circumference of the trunk and then determine the diameter from the circumference. Once you know the diameter at 4.5 feet above the ground level, you'd have to look, you could look online or you could contact me if you need help finding it, but there are websites available where you can multiply the diameter at what's called breast height, 4.5 feet above ground, by a standard factor that depends on the species. So there'd be one factor for oaks and a different factor to multiply the diameter by for maples.
Okay. Now, I don't know the specific species, I guess. I know they're oaks and maples. Does it matter if I don't know which type of oak or maple?
Yes, it can matter. Maples are divided into two broad categories, soft maples and hard maples. Hard maples are the sugar maple type. Soft maples would be more like silver maples. My guess is that if you have very old trees, they're more likely to be the hard maple type, but you could also have some old sugar maples, but they grow at very different rates and would have a different factor, so you'd want to have a way to distinguish those. The oaks, it's easier probably to distinguish the two categories of oaks, red oaks and white oaks. And the easiest way to do that is by the lobes in the leaves. If they have rounded lobes, they're white oaks. If they have pointed lobes, they're red oaks.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And you can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. This is from John in Iowa City. There's a Wolf River apple tree planted over 100 years ago by my great-grandfather on a farm in Iowa. How can I graft cuttings from this tree onto the Fuji apple tree in my backyard?
Well, it's a possibility. There's various ways to graft the tree. What they might want to try, though, instead is maybe graft that on to a dwarfing rootstock and have just a single tree. You can do that. That's fairly easy. You can do a whip or tongue graft. As far as the rootstocks, they're kind of hard to come by, but Rain Tree Nursery in Washington State has apple rootstocks. And so these are about pencil size and thickness, so you need a small branch from the desired tree. And you simply make the necessary cuts and graft those together. Most of the rootstocks that you find are basically dwarfing, so you'll have the same type of fruit but a smaller size tree. And they're much easier to basically maintain. So that would be my suggestion, maybe do that. A good time to do that type of graft would be typically late winter.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jim is on the line now in Mason City. Hi, Jim.
Howdy.
Hi, what's your question?
I called earlier this year about letting the squirrels repopulate my grove with oak trees, you know, let them do the work. The question is, do oak trees like a specific soil type to grow in? And the reason I'm asking this is in town here, you know, oaks seem to grow in just certain neighborhoods and not all over. That's
well,
the question.
Okay. I would say most oak trees are pretty adaptable. Okay. There are certain ones that you'll find in certain situations, but they're pretty adaptable. If you have basically a good, well-drained soil, then most of those will be fine.
Okay. Okay. All right. I just want to see you.
Do the squirrels look like they're doing a good job?
Oh, my God. They went crazy.
They're good workers.
Oh, yeah. There's no oak trees in this grove, nor walnut trees, and I got probably 5 gallons of more than that, of walnuts and at least 4 or 5 gallons of acorns, and they're all gone. So,
all right.
Good job.
I hope it works great. Thanks a lot for your call, Jim.
All righty. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. Here's another call. This is Randy in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I visit the Iowa State campus about twice a year on business, and outside the Parks Library, there are some wonderful, wonderful elm trees. Don't know anything about them. Is there anything you can tell me?
So near the Parks Library, there are some enormous red elms, Ulmus rubra, sometimes also called slippery elm. They are native to the United States and are very old trees. They are susceptible to Dutch elm disease, which has caused the demise of many other native elms in our area. But those particular trees have been treated to try to ward off the disease, and so far we've been successful at preserving them.
And for quite some time.
Yes.
So that makes them quite unusual.
Yes. We haven't had 100% success with treatment. We've lost some elms as well recently, but those particular ones we've been fortunate to preserve.
All right, Randy, thank you so much for your call. And Laura is on the line next in Madison County with a similar question. Hi, Laura.
Hi there. I'm remembering a beautiful oak tree off the southeast corner of McKay Hall on the Iowa State campus, and I wondered what happened to it.
Southeast corner of McKay. I wonder if you're thinking of the same oak that I mentioned. Which,
right near Cat Hall.
Yes,
right.
Because those buildings are close to each other, and it would be the southeast side of McKay. So that is a bur oak, Quercus macrocarpa, and it's likely one of the oldest trees on our campus. Our estimates based on trunk diameter put it at about 220 years old. So it is likely that tree existed on the land before the campus was founded. The university has been around 156 years now. So it's a beautiful tree, and we hope to keep it alive as long as possible, and we're also trying to propagate it from acorns.
Oh, that's great. Okay, thanks a lot.
And Laura, thank you so much for your call. Is it in good health?
It is in good health now. There's really no sign of disease or decline. Despite its age, it's in remarkably good shape.
Let's go next to Susan on the line in Dubuque at 866-780-9100. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Hey, I was wondering, we just built a new home, and we put out a large geofield for geothermal heating for our home. And I wonder if you have any recommendations about any types of trees that we could plant there that wouldn't hurt our geofield.
That's an ominous silence.
Well, I'm not sure. Now, I will say tree roots tend to be quite shallow. The vast majority of a tree's roots can be found in the upper 12 to 18 inches of soil. So they are not very deep. They're there basically because that's where the topsoil contain the nutrients. But they also need to breathe, and there's a little bit of air in the small little pockets of empty space in the soil. So they are not very deep. So if this is below that area, that shouldn't be a big factor.
Okay. Because the depth of the geofield is around 7 foot.
Okay. Very
so
few.
I didn't know whether, you know, the tree root taps. The taproot might damage or something.
Typically, they don't go that deep. Some trees, like oaks, do have taproots, but unless there's something there to draw them. For example, if you had like a sewer line and there was a leak in the sewer line, that would actually draw them deeper into the soil. But if you don't have that, they typically stay near the surface.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I know geofields are new now, and I was asking people about it, and they didn't seem to know. So thank you for your information.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot for your call. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at ISU. Next up, we have CJ on the line in Fairbank. Hello, CJ.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I recently purchased an acreage, and it has 11 apple trees on it. And I'm told by the neighbors that they're quite old, over 100 years old. And I'd like to have someone come and identify them for me, if you could help me. Tell me who could do that.
Well, probably the best way of doing that would be to go out in the fall when the apples are mature, and then to take some photographs of the apples, or actually send us some apples at that time. And you want apples that are basically fully mature and also unblemished, because identifying the apples is based on the shape of the apple and also the color at maturity. So those two things mainly. So you would take some pictures, if you want, basically from the side, from the bottom, from the top, and send those to Iowa State, or pick one or two apples, put them in a box, and send those to Iowa State. Either way would be fine, but we're probably going to have to see the fruit. The leaves really don't tell us much as far as IDing it.
And how accurate do you think you can be?
Fairly. These are educated guesses, but knowing the apparent age would be very helpful, because that would eliminate all the new varieties, obviously. And seeing that shape and the color, knowing that basically kind of narrows it down quite a bit.
Okay, do you have an address on where I should send these to?
Right. If you want to send them basically actual specimens in the mail, send those to Horticulture Extension, Horticulture Building, Iowa State University, Ames, Iowa, 50011. If you want to send an email with photos, you can just attach those. Send it to Hortline, Hortline, at iastate.edu.
Would it be helpful if I sent pictures of the tree also?
That doesn't really help a great deal with variety. It's basically we're gonna need to see those actual apples at maturity. That's the main thing with those.
And so do you have a little snack session and everybody gets together around a table? How do you do it?
I know people, and I forward those on to those, and we kind of look at them and make our decision.
All right, and it's not based on flavor at all, or do you try them?
We can do that. It's basically color and shape, and that's why it needs to be unblemished. If you have a lot of insect damage, it's going to really make it misshapen, and that really makes it very difficult at that point.
Or if you pick the fruit before it's actually ripe, I mean,
that definitely
impacts the color.
Right, right. So the color, the shape are very important.
All right, CJ, thanks a lot for your call. And we were getting people excited about your sycamore trees earlier, Bill. The sycamore trees that were offered this fall through the Alumni Association, are all of those gone?
I'm afraid they are. We had a lot of interest in those, and we are sold out, so I'm sorry about that.
All right, so wait for the swamp oaks next year.
Yeah.
All right.
Swamp white oak,
okay.
Yes. Beautiful tree.
All right, Kenny is on the line next in Cedar Falls. Hi, Kenny.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
I don't have a question. Early in the spring, I called in. We brought some white oaks out of Texas, and this spring they all lived except one, and I didn't know what killed it for sure, whether winter kill or what, and he said there was nothing I could do with it, just watch it. But it come back during the summer, looks good, except it's the main shoot is dead, but it's still branched out and leafing pretty good. I just want to let you know what happened to them.
Oh, great.
That's good.
But
All right. So the wait and see approach worked out well. <That's>, you usually don't hear the success stories, do you, Richard?
Well, it's always nice to know that if you're patient, sometimes things work out pretty good.
Absolutely. This is a question from Laura. Last winter, our yard had severe winter kill. I saved a part of one holly and wygalia and one helleborus. How can I best take care of them over the winter in southwestern Iowa?
Well, fortunately, this year we've had a much better year as far as moisture-wise. So going into winter, we're in pretty good shape. There's been some nice rainfall. So last year, it was kind of a combination where we had extremely dry summer, and then we had a very cold winter, no snow cover at all, basically. We got extremely cold soil temperatures, so it's kind of the perfect storm. I don't see that happening this year, so I don't see that they really have to do much of anything. There should be no need to water with the helleborus. You might maybe cover that with maybe some straw, maybe in late November, so it has a little bit of winter protection.
All right. And again, we're all hoping that this winter is not like last winter.
It can't be.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron is here. Bill Graves, Associate Dean of Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, is also here. They're ready to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron and Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You can join our conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Bill is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I had a comment and a question. One is, I don't know if they've ever been up to the college, Cornell, there in Mount Vernon. It's been 20 years ago since I was up there, but there's the hugest ginkgo tree there that, if you want to see a heritage tree, it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I had another question. I have a maple tree that my son planted 30 years ago. How can I tell whether it's a pure red maple? And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks a lot.
So I haven't seen that tree, the ginkgo, but I'll have to get there and take a look. Ginkgo is not considered native, at least in this time in history, to North America. So the ginkgos that were brought to the U.S., there's quite a bit known about the very first ones that were brought into the country, and it would be interesting to know whether this tree in Iowa might be among the very original ones, maybe the first one brought to the state of Iowa. So I'll have to get there. I'm glad to know about that. The red maple, typically the lobing in the leaf, is a good indicator of how pure of a red maple it is. Red maple hybridizes with silver maple, and they do that freely in nature. So a tree coming up on its own from seed in the wild might be a combination of red and silver maple. Silver maples tend to have something closer to a five-lobed leaf, and red maples, pure red maples, something closer to a purely three-lobed leaf, and often a smaller leaf overall than silver maple. Also, the lower side of silver maple leaves is silver. Red maples are usually not quite as silvery, so those would be some ways to tell.
All right. is there a definitive way?
Well, I think in order to make a strict determination, some genetic analysis would need to be done.
But they don't sell the cheek swab kits do for dogs and people.
Nothing quite that simple, no, unfortunately.
All right, let's go back to the phones. John is on the line in Indianola. Hi, John.
Hi. First off, I'd like to say I really enjoy the show. Try to catch
thanks.
Up whenever I can. My question is regards to the Asian beetles. I've got the pine trees from the agricultural from Iowa State years ago. probably 30 years ago, they grew into beautiful trees, and then a few years back, the Asian beetles did their thing on them. And I was just curious, the Asian beetles don't seem to be around as much as they were. Are they still an issue with the pine trees, or is that over?
Now, when you say Asian beetles, I think of maybe Japanese beetles or Asian ladybird beetles.
Are you talking about the green ones or the orange ones?
No, these are the red ones or orange ones that look like little ladybugs. So okay. I want to be politically correct. I didn't know if there were others.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So the Asian ladybird beetles, they basically feed on aphids. And uh-huh. their population varies from year to year, but they would have no effect or damage the pine trees at all. So there's no connection there as far as the health of the pine trees.
Now there
is a very small little pine bark beetle that okay. may be involved in the transmission of pine wilt. And that's a fairly common disease on the Scotch pine. And over the last 25, 30 years in Iowa, the Scotch pine population has gradually decreased. And so right now you don't see very many larger old specimens. You'll see smaller ones, but not the larger ones. And with the pine wilt, that is typically thought to be due to a very small nematode transmitted or transferred by the pine beetle.
Oh, I see. Well, there were a series of holes all the way around the trees, all the way up. That was the first thing. And then they turned brown, and then eventually they all died, and I had to have them cut down. But I thought it was the beetle, but anyway. So
probably pine wilt. And with pine wilt, you have a very healthy tree, and then very suddenly it turns totally brown within typically maybe a month or two. So you have this nice green tree. Then it turns kind of grayish green, and then it's totally dead in like a month or two, and you take it down. As far as the holes around the trunk, if they're in a straight line, I would assume that's due to the sapsucker, which is a woodpecker. They like to go to certain trees, and they drill these holes in the trunk, and then they suck sap from the holes in the trees.
Okay. Well, I'm an old man now, and the Japanese say, you know, you should. Old men shouldn't be planting trees, so I'm going to have to pass on the rest now on. But
I think it's a good investment in the future anyway, John, and keep buying green bananas, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep, thanks a lot for your call.
Much.
Yep.
Bye now.
Bye. Dave is on the line next in Urbandale. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning. I'm really enjoying the discussion of heritage trees. Your listeners might be interested that the city of Urbandale has on their website three individual walks of looking at major trees around the city. And all you need to do is Google 5 miles of beauty, and it will come right up. And you can read the text, you can print out the maps, you can walk the tours or drive some of them. And it's very interesting, some of the trees that are in especially the old part of Urbandale.
All right. Thanks for the tip, Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Next, let's go to Nick in Amana. Hi, Nick.
Yes.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Apple trees, I guess. In 2013, I have a delicious apple tree, supposedly. And over the years, they were big and had the lumps on the end of the apple. Mm-hmm. And in 13, it just had the most apples I've ever seen on a tree, probably 2 pickup loads at least.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke the major branches out because they were so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But these apples were about half the size, and they were round, not even looking like a delicious, and they didn't even taste the same. And I was just wondering what was going on there.
Well, basically, when you have a large crop like that, that's going to affect their size and maybe the quality or taste. And so it's basically the environment, the conditions. The tree is still the same. It hasn't changed. But the fact that it had a huge crop and maybe the weather conditions affected the quality of the fruit.
Okay. Yeah, that was baffled by that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, let's go to Teresa in Illinois. Hi, Teresa.
Hello. Good morning to all of you.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I was wondering where to go to get the information on how to determine the age of a tree, because I have a black walnut tree, and we know it's at least 100 years old, and I was wondering if we could figure out a little closer how old it was.
I don't have a precise website address, but I do know, because I've done it myself, that if you Google determining tree age or something similar to that phrase, you'll get several websites that will show these equations. If you have any difficulty with finding that information, you could email the Hort line, and Richard and I can get you that information. But it should be pretty easy to find online.
All right, and as long as you know what kind of tree it is, you should probably be able to find your equation, right?
That's right.
All right. Well, Teresa, thank you so much for your call. And next up, Tony is on the line in Central City. Hi, Tony.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I got some questions about native Iowa peaches. I've got some saplings. They're probably about a foot tall. And I want to know best way to preserve them through the winter, being they're so little. They're very spindly. I want to know, make sure they'll survive to spring. I didn't know if there was a really good way other than straw. I'm worried about rabbits chewing on them or deer.
Right. Are they growing in the ground?
Well, I've got them. I just put them in my garden for now. I transplanted them.
Okay.
A friend of mine, these are the native, the little peaches, the little Iowa peaches. My father-in-law actually brought these up from his farm from 1940. So we're trying to keep the line going. You made me think of it when you started talking heritage trees.
Okay. So if they're growing in the ground, what I would do is basically put chicken wire fencing or hardware cloth around them. It should be at least 2 feet tall. And that's basically to prevent rabbit browsing, because if we have snow cover and they stick above the ground, they will basically destroy them if they have the chance. So I would do that. And you can, if you want, maybe fill that area in with some straw or pine needles so they have a little bit of winter protection.
All right. Sounds like a good plan, Tony. Thanks a lot for your call. Mike is up next in Waterloo. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. I have an agenda, and I want you to evaluate it or blow it up or whatever. I want to start some hickory trees in pots, and I'm thinking of making some three-foot-tall pots from, say, roof belt, you know, make a circular six-inch pot 3 feet long, and letting the plant grow in there and having the taproot be air-pruned for transplanting at a later date.
I like that plan. I'm actually trying to do similar strategies with some hickories we're trying to propagate for our heritage tree program. I think hickory is a tree that should be, hickories in general, there are several species, but I think that group of trees is a group that should be used more often than it is for...
I never hear them talked about.
I think they're ignored because they have this reputation of having a difficult to work with root system and difficult trees to grow in pots and transplant. But I think your strategy sounds like it should be helpful in that the more that you root prune, the more branching that you're going to encourage in the root system. And that is thought to make it much easier to transplant from a pot into the ground. So we're working on similar strategies here at the university.
Okay, and then my intent is I have a wooded area inside of a windbreak on my acreage, and I have a row of ash trees in there. Could I use these? Say I am successful in getting some to germinate, et cetera. Could I use these as an understory tree between those ashes, thinking that eventually I may lose those, and if not, take them out at a later date to let the hickories go?
Yes, I think so. Eventually, those hickories are going to want quite a bit of sunlight. But I think at least at the beginning, while you're waiting for perhaps, unfortunately, the demise of your ash, you could follow that strategy. If it looks like they're struggling and not growing vigorously, you might have to consider removing an ash or two in advance of maybe ash borers getting to them in order just to create enough sunlight for the hickories to thrive.
Okay. And then coach me on seed stratification.
Okay. Well, hickories, seed stratification generally means a period of cold, moist conditions. And the definitely moist is critical, not wet. So you want damp but not saturated sand, or sphagnum peat moss is often used, something that holds some moisture but won't just create a soaking wet condition. Then the seeds are mixed in with this moist material. You could do it in Ziploc bags or something like that and stick them in the refrigerator for at least a couple of months, but up to 4 or 5 months is usually okay too. On average, I think people typically stratify for about 3 months. And after that, once those seeds are sown, they should germinate readily.
Okay. The other question is, could I do that outside of the refrigerator? Put them in pots and leave them in an unheated garage?
Yes, although one thing to be watchful for is rodent predation. When I've tried that, one way or another, mice or some other kind of animal gets to them. So you just want to be sure to protect them from that kind of damage.
Okay. Would it be unreasonable to actually plant them in pots? And then I guess if you're planting, my understanding on the hickories is they could put up to a foot or two of taproot before they ever emerge from the ground. So if I tried them in pots, they'd have to be in some kind of a tree pot to begin with, correct?
Yeah, I think the deeper the pot, the better. But anything that you can do to encourage branching through the air pruning that you mentioned earlier would be helpful.
All right, Mike, good luck with your project. Bill is on the line next from Waverly. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. I'll keep it brief. We have a large catalpa that grows right next to the backwater of the Cedar River north of Waverly here. And someone told me they didn't think it was native to this part of Iowa, that maybe the railroad used catalpa for railroad ties back in the early 1900s. I was wondering if you could dispel that or what your comment is on that.
Well, it's possible that there are stories about other species as well near railroad lines and the association of railroads with tree distribution. And I guess it is possible that catalpa seeds could have somehow made their way to that site because of the transportation in the area. I couldn't totally rule that out.
All right, Bill, I don't know if that helps you. Let's try to squeeze in one more question here before we go. This is from Mary in Coon Rapids. This fall, we harvested several hedge apples from a thorny locust tree in our timber. Can they be grown from seed? And if so, what's the best method?
Well, they can be. I guess what I would do is just leave them outside. And basically what's going to happen is the freezing and thawing should gradually turn them kind of soft and mushy. And then early next spring, try to remove the seed from that kind of mushy mess and plant the seeds in the ground at that point.
Can you just plant it in the mushy mess? Or do you...
I would try to get the seeds out, but they're hard, they're rock hard, and you need to let the weather take care of it, and they will kind of turn very mushy, and then they'll also go through the cold and moisture too. So just leave them outside basically in the winter.
All right. Thank you so much for being here today, Richard Duran.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Duran and Bill Graves. What a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bill Graves, Associate Dean of the Graduate College and Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. The show is produced by Dennis Reese, Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.